You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Manuel toko ingoa. No mai, hari mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rapa Wednesday. I am your host, Manny, and I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined by producers Toby and Theo. Efai Akane, coming up on the show for our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez-March about the Green Party's bill to protect people placing emergency calls for drug overdoses and the tensions between the National and NZ First parties over our stance on the Iran war. Toby, what do you have for us today?
I spoke to Auckland University Emeritus Professor Dr. Ralph Cooney about the uptake of renewable energy in the United States.
And Theo, what do you have for us today?
I spoke to Lo Alin, campaigner calling for New Zealand to officially recognise the Armenian genocide.
He aha o whakaro. We would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces today, so get in touch. Tukupatahi mai, text in on 5395. Ko wā e wareware, e ahe ana koutou, te whakaronga ki anei kororo anō. Hei pakehere rukiruki mā runga I te pai. Tukutuku I irarangi poho, me haere ke 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
Last week, the Green Party's bill to protect overdose emergency callers from legal risks received cross-party support, passing its first reading, keeping it on track to potentially become law. Minor infractions such as minor possession and paraphernalia would be overlooked when calling for emergency services to obtain help for someone overdosing. And an official information request by the Herald into Winston Peters' Foreign Minister's office revealed disagreements between the New Zealand First leader and Prime Minister Christopher Luxon over the coalition government's stance on the war in Iran, with the Prime Minister pushing for greater support for the United States bombings. So for our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez-March about the Green Party's overdose emergency callers bill and the revelations over the US war in Iran.
Good morning, Ricardo.
Morena, thanks for having me.
I want to start off by talking about the Greens bill to protect overdose callers. Let's start by talking about what the motivation behind the bill is. Why is it important to bring?
Yeah, the Good Samaritan bill brought by my colleague Kahurangi Kara aims to effectively decriminalize people calling for help when someone they love or care for is overdosing. Right now, in New Zealand, we have about 3 deaths a week from preventable and accidental overdoses. And we know that too many people are worried to actually call for help for someone they love and care for out of fear that they may be criminalized as a result of being associated with the person, for example. It shouldn't be that way. This bill will save lives, and we hope we can usher it through all stages.
At this current point in time, are there many people who are being criminalized in these situations, or is it more of reducing the fear that people may have, which will then help them come forward?
It's a matter of the fact that the law is preventing people from asking for help. Kahurangi spoke about some examples in a specific case where someone died and people were genuinely worried to call for help. The bill itself, what it will do is it will basically ensure that when someone calls 111, for example, to help someone who's overdosing, they will not be charged for low-level drug offenses. So this is specifically for low-level drug offenses, which could include things like having drug paraphernalia, drugs for personal use, and enabling premises for low-level offending as well. And these are sensible changes that we work with the Drug Foundation with the aim of saving lives and treating drug use as a health issue, not a criminal issue, which is something we know New Zealanders support.
To give us a narrative story here, could you detail a situation in which this might change the outcome?
Yeah, so I was in the chamber when Kahurangi spoke about Jacob Gunnell. So he was 24 when he died, and Kahu had actually sought permission from the family to speak about his story. And Jacob had a reaction from to LSD on the night. And basically his friends were trying to support him and to, you know, direct traffic, but they didn't call 111 out of fear. And Jacob, in a state of confusion, ran and effectively fell to his death. Shelley, the mum, has long talked about how if somebody had actually called 111, he would have been saved. And we know that this is a common occurrence in Aotearoa where people are worried about interacting with the police for drug matters, even though people may be trying to save lives.
I mean, that's heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah.
With this bill, it's not a policy coming up for the next election. This is in Parliament right now, am I correct?
That is correct. And we're really pleased to have the support of the Labour Party, of the Pati Māori, and the ACT Party as well, which means that it has actually gone through Select Committee. Again, our call here is to just, we're asking political parties to treat drug use as a health issue. For too long, people have been criminalized when they just needed support and needed healthcare. And we've long supported the campaigns that have called for healthcare, not handcuffs. So we are inviting people to submit to the bill when submissions are ready to be opened and to contribute their stories about maybe what has prevented them from calling support when someone's overdosing. And we know that with opioid use increasing in Aotearoa, the risk of these overdose has now become higher. And if there's a lot of advertisement for things like alcohol overdosing and people treat this as something that, you know, is deserving of support, we should afford the same thing for people who are overdosing for other substances that are currently criminalized.
Okay, I'm going to have to move on now so we don't run out of time. You have been very vocally opposed in our interviews on the war in Iran. So I wanted to talk to you about the recent developments within the coalition government around who has supported and who has opposed the war and New Zealand's stance upon that. There was the story recently that came out from an official information request made by the Herald into the foreign minister's office, into which is Winston Peters, the leader of New Zealand First. He had released the communications between his office and the Prime Minister's office, showing the Prime Minister's office was encouraging or trying to get New Zealand to take a stance more aligned and more in support of the United States military actions here. I would like to hear your thoughts on this first so we can then dive into the nitty-gritty of it all. Mm. Yeah, what were your first reactions to hearing this?
I don't think people will be surprised to hear that the Prime Minister was openly trying to, well, or at least within the coalition, trying to push to align ourselves with the United States and effectively endorse this illegal war. Even before those documents came out, we had the Prime Minister at a stand-up effectively supporting war crimes when he spoke about the types of interventions that would be justified. And so what we have here is a Prime Minister that is tying us to the hip to the Trump administration, and that's extremely concerning. This war is hurting people's pockets. It's costing lives, and above it all, it shows that international rules-based order is being completely undermined by the United States. We should be a country that stands for independent foreign policy, not just being Donald Trump's buddies, no matter what, and without disregard to human life or the cost of living crisis that this war is exacerbating.
Do you think there would have ever been a world in which if we had joined an American coalition, we could now be saying, putting up our hands to say, hey, let's stop this thing, let's wind it back now that it's hurting the back pocket of Kiwis?
This is part of the problem, is that once our government chooses to align ourselves with illegal wars and with the Trump administration, it's really hard to walk it back. And we have permanent reputational damage internationally where we can no longer be seen as a country that stands up for human rights, for justice, for being a country of diplomacy. And instead, we're a country that supports warmongering and basically the powerful few that are costing us every day. And New Zealanders are going to be poorer if we ever have a government that keeps aligning itself closer to the United States.
And finally, what do you feel like this says about the coalition government, the disagreement here, and then the leak into the public? This has caused at least some sort of disagreement here, yeah, quite publicly right before the election campaigning kicks off. Yeah,
look, I mean, we all know that Winston has been trying to undermine the Prime Minister throughout the release of these documents, and they are all fighting. But I kind of don't really care about the psychodrama of the coalition. We've got people who are struggling to make ends meet. Their petty infighting is just a sign that they care more about their egos and positions of power than actually fixing the cost of living crisis. And yeah, we're ready for a snap election should we need one, but we're focused on what people care about.
All right. Well, I can see the next person trying to get into the studio. So thank you very, very much, Ricardo.
Kia ora, Manel. Thank you.
Kia ora. Ka kite.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March on their party's bill to protect people placing emergency calls for drug overdoses and the tensions between the national government pushing for greater support on the war in Iran.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
This is Pressure Drop by Toots and the Maytals. We'll be right back after this break.
We'll be right back. pursuit and fiery auto crashes. Some will die in hot pursuit while sifting through my ashes. Some will fall in love with life and drink it from a fountain that is pouring like an avalanche coming down the mountain.
I don't mind the sun sometimes, the images it shows. I can taste you on my lips and smell you in my clothes. Cinnamon and sugary and softly spoken lies. You never know just how you look through other people's eyes.
Mikey took a knife while arguing in traffic. Flipper died a natural death. He caught a nasty virus. Then there was the ever-present football player rapist. They were all in love with dying. They were doing it in Texas. Holly caught a bullet, but it only hit his leg. Well, it should have been a better shot. Got him in the head. They were all in love with dying. They were drinking from a fountain that was pouring like an avalanche coming down the mountain.
I don't mind the sun sometimes. The images it shows. On my lips and smell you in my clothes. Cinnamon and sugary and softly spoken lies. You never know just how you look through other people's eyes.
Harding has pulled into the station with phenomenal new album Train on the Island, and we have copies of the vinyl to give away to B card holders. So stay on board the breakfast wagon all week for your cue to enter. Aldous Harding, Train on the Island, out this Friday via Flying Nun Records and where all good music is found.
The world-famous True School Hip-Hop Show.
Thursday nights, take a deep dive into all things hip-hop with BFM's True School, checking in on current and historical flows, beats, and grooves, both local and international. A Radio B institution spanning decades of solid cuts and the one show to know.
We like the breeze, float straight out of our lids.
True School Hip-Hop Show.
Keeping you clued in on what's fronting in the world of hip-hop.
True School Hip-Hop Show.
Who you calling the pigs?
Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. with Get Ban, Luz, Max, Barry, and Eve Love in the area.
On 95 BFM.
The Worms better watch their back.
Sometimes you need a bit of uns.
That snooze button better be disarmed.
I like it. It's making my eyelid twitch. Love it.
And the wrong side of the bed better shuffle over.
And they're just so beautifully, like, menstrual.
Because we've got a little something for your gratitude journal.
Cowbella.
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 It's the 95 BFM Breakfast Show with your hosts, Rosetta and Millie. 7 till 10 every weekday. Thanks to 8:30 Coffee Roasters.
The original originator.
at 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Before the break, we had Pepper by the Butthole Surfers and Pressure Drop by Toots and the Maytals. Please let us know your thoughts on any of these pieces today. You can text in on 5395 or call us on 309-3879.
The Wire.
For decades, scientists have been raising the alarm about climate change and urging those in power to move towards the adoption of greener, more renewable sources of energy production. These calls have often been met with fierce resistance from the political right in the United States, with Republican President Donald Trump repeatedly describing climate change as a hoax and reversing efforts to transition away from fossil fuels. At the same time, however, the sun-drenched regions of the southern United States have immense potential for solar power. Many states in this region are now switching to renewable energy sources for simple economic reasons, despite being Republican strongholds. This morning, I spoke to chemistry expert Dr. Ralph Cooney about this growing trend. You've pointed out in your recent article there's a bit of a paradox about the uptake of renewable energy in the United States. Despite the fact that many Republicans are still apparently skeptical about the reality of climate change, some of the states which are leading in renewable energy are in fact Republican states in the South, Southwest, and Midwest of the country. I thought we could start by talking about the potential for expanding renewables in these areas. Before we even get into the politics, I mean, why is it that these parts of the United States have such potential for renewable energy?
Well, I suppose most of it will be solar, and they're Midwest, and as you, the sort of states you're talking about, often have what we would call high solar potential, so they get a lot of sunlight, and more so than perhaps the East Coast, for example, the East Coast and states. So I think they have a natural advantage. Many of those sort of drier states, Midwestern states could potentially become major solar exporters, in fact.
I suppose there's a bit of an irony here in the fact that America's Industrial Revolution was kicked off in the northeastern states, where people were burning coal to power their factories, and now it's the South that seems to be the future of solar energy.
Yes, there is. Yeah, there is a contradiction there, somewhat paradox. And indeed, you know, when the first solar panels of the modern type came out in 1954, so they've been around for a long time. So there is there was an alternative, but it's really it is true that it's only in very recent times, like in the last year or two, where it's become very clear that solar energy and wind energy are much cheaper than the cheapest of the fossil fuels, and that has been the thing that at least the Republican, this sort of sector and the faction, if you like, of the Republicans that are endorsing this approach, that they're tuned into, and they can justify it. I'm sure actually that the number of Republicans who are concerned about climate change, I think there's no doubt it's quite high, but political conformity makes them avoid presenting that as an argument.
As you've made clear there, solar and wind are becoming more cost-effective. There was an article that came out yesterday on RNZ with the headline, New Zealand passes solar tipping point, meaning that New Zealanders who buy solar panels will save more money than they spend. And as you point out in your article, renewable electricity production in the United States will soon surpass gas for the first time. What are the technical innovations that have happened recently that have actually pushed renewable energy over the edge, so to speak?
I mean, the most important one is that solar panels are basically very simple devices. That, you know, their science, if you like, has been known, as I've mentioned, for probably 50 years, more than that. And so they're very well established. It doesn't need to be refined, or rather I would say that they're quite viable economically as they stand. And what has happened in the last few years is the mass production of those units, particularly in places like China, where the actual unit cost of producing a panel has dropped precipitously over that interval of a couple of years. And so suddenly they're very much cheaper than they were. And in fact, we may not have seen the bottom of that curve. I think it's quite likely they'll continue to get cheaper and cheaper. The World Economic Forum a year or so ago was following the rate of decrease in the cost of solar panels and the ability of companies to mass produce them at relatively low cost. And the World Economic Forum projects that the costs are going to continue to decrease into the future for some time. So they're actually going to get cheaper.
So do you think that this kind of technology will eventually reach a point where renewable energy sources are adopted around the world mainly on a cost-saving basis and the climate change argument will become sort of secondary or fade into the background?
Oh, I think the evidence, the scientific evidence for climate change is so categorical that it's very hard to actually, I'm a scientist, the evidence for that has been published for the last few years by NASA before Trump downsized it, was categorical. I mean, I think most people hear that evidence. I give a lot of community talks. No one ever asks the question afterwards. They just walk away, oh, okay, now I understand why it's so certain. So I think actually the two processes will go together. And in fact, I think a lot of the Republicans who are saying, you know, we still think it's a sham because the boss says we must say that. But actually, I think 90% of people with common sense, including Americans, will, and probably already do to a degree, accept that the planet is warming, and there is virtually no doubt about that. And it's caused by CO2, which acts like a kind of heat sponge in the atmosphere.
Lastly, I was wondering if you had any thoughts or comments on Elon Musk. He strikes me as an unusual figure in the political landscape in America. As you've said, the political right in the United States has long been resistant to green energy, but Elon Musk has long been an advocate of renewables and, in fact, runs an electric car company. But for the past few years, he's been strongly aligned with the political right. Do you have any thoughts on Musk, and do you think he possibly represents the future of the Republicans?
I think that Musk is typical of a certain faction of the Republicans. But I'm absolutely certain that he understands the arguments for climate warming and accepts them. And so I think the future lies with people who actually understand that it's really happening. And secondly, that renewables will play a major role, including EVs in the case of Elon Musk. I thought what he did in those early days where Trump got him to go through as an efficiency driver, I think probably did so much damage that I think it would be difficult for him to make a comeback on the public. I mean, the Republicans might think he's a hero, but I think the American population generally probably has a much greater question mark about him.
That was Emeritus Professor Dr. Ralph Cooney from the University of Auckland.
This is, of course, Teardrop by Massive Attack. We'll be right back after this break. We'll be right back. Sexy Boy by Air. Keep it on the B. We'll be right back.
That was Sexy Boy by Air, and before that was Teardrop by Massive Attack. Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Please let us know your thoughts on any of these interviews today. Text in on 5395 or call us on 309 3879.
So it's a very odd time to be alive, as they say.
The Wire. It's time to get action with Action Station Aotearoa, the segment where we chat with the people campaigning for a fairer future.
In 1915, the Ottoman Empire began a campaign of arrests, deportations, death marches, and massacres that we now call the Armenian Genocide. The campaign itself took place in a wider context of Armenian persecution, but between the years 1915 and 16, 1.5 million Armenians, alongside Assyrians and Greeks, were killed. The term genocide was not coined until several decades later, but the academic consensus is that the massacres, rapes, deportations, and destruction of Armenian cultural heritage that took place readily meets the criteria of the term. At the time, members of parliament in New Zealand, including the Prime Minister, decried the atrocities, with at least one representative pointing to what seemed like the murder of the entire Armenian nation. However, New Zealand is not one of the 34 governments and parliaments that officially recognise the Armenian genocide. This position is in line with the successor state to the Ottoman Empire, Turkey's, protracted campaign of denial to this day. So for this week's Get Action, I spoke to Lo Alin on their petition for New Zealand to formally recognise the Armenian genocide. Kia ora, Lo. So first of all, can you tell us a bit about what your petition is calling for?
Kia ora. Yeah, thanks for having me on. So basically, my petition is urging the New Zealand government to formally recognize the Armenian Genocide of 1915. So the Ottoman Empire murdered up to 1.5 million Armenians, half a million Assyrians, and 350,000 Greeks. And at the time, many other countries recognized it as an atrocity, but the word genocide didn't exist yet. So in the years since, genocide scholars overwhelmingly agree that the actions of the Ottoman Empire do constitute a genocide, but some countries, including New Zealand and Australia, refuse to use that term. So it's been a big movement within the Armenian diaspora to try and get our countries to tell the truth and acknowledge our history. The United States finally recognized the Armenian Genocide in 2021. Canada and Mexico recognize it, as well as Russia, most of Europe, most of Latin America. So to me, I honestly see it as very shameful that a country like New Zealand, which claims to be a world leader, still hasn't taken this pretty basic step of acknowledging history. So my petition is trying to right that wrong.
Yeah, so in recent times, governments of the day in New Zealand have kind of couched statements on the Armenian mm-hmm. genocide in this kind of language that directs the responsibility of calling it a genocide to the parties involved. So, for example, John Key's office said it was down to those directly concerned to work through. Mm-hmm. Jacinda Ardern called it significant and tragic, but again said it was down to a reconciliation process for the parties involved, as did Nanaia Mahuta, the then Minister of Foreign Affairs. Mm-hmm. Now, the Green Party has maintained a position of recognition, but I imagine the response to this petition by the government, whether this government or potentially a different one come November, would be that New Zealanders have bigger concerns right now than something that happened over 100 years ago. What would you say to that? Why does recognition of the genocide matter?
Yeah, so recognition of the genocide, while it does seem like, you know, it's something that happened 111 years ago now, it is still really relevant today because denial of genocide paves the way for future genocide to happen. So we saw in 1939, Adolf Hitler has a quote saying, "Who does now speak of the annihilation of the Armenians?" as a justification for invading Poland. You know, he saw it as something he could get away with because other countries had gotten away with it in the past. So we have a responsibility, no matter what time, no matter what place in the world, we have a responsibility to acknowledge the history so that we can ensure it doesn't happen again. And, you know, we do have a lot of stuff going on in the world today, and that just calls to attention even more the need for truth and history and learning from the past instead of allowing it to repeat itself.
Right, and I mean, a few examples of that would be the current genocide in Gaza, which I don't believe the government has recognized as such. And I think also a little bit further back, while we did have our parliament condemn the ethnic cleansing of Uyghurs in China, the Labour government did change the wording at the time to exclude the word genocide.
Yeah, no, and that's something that I'm incredibly passionate about as well. I've been involved with Palestine advocacy movements for the last several years. And the way I see it, you know, if we can't have the spine to acknowledge a genocide of the past, how are we going to acknowledge and fight against genocides today?
So part of the impetus for your petition was the recent marking of the Armenian Genocide Remembrance Day, which was on 24th of April, and recognises what's generally seen to be the beginning of the Armenian Genocide, when generally Armenian scholars and leaders were removed from Istanbul and the kind of genocide began at that moment. That's obviously very close to another commemorative day that's quite significant to Aotearoa New Zealand. So what's the connection between Anzac Day and the Armenian Genocide?
Yeah, so there's actually a really strong connection that has been absolutely wild for me to uncover, because this is something that is not widely taught. But yeah, like you said, the 24th of April marks the beginning of the Armenian Genocide, and then the very next day, the Anzacs landed in Gallipoli. So the Anzacs were actually among the first to witness firsthand the atrocities that were happening in the Ottoman Empire against Armenians, Assyrians, and Greeks. The Ottomans, there's some really incredible stories, actually, of Anzacs trying to rescue Armenian refugees and Armenian prisoners as the Anzacs were also being taken prisoners of war. And then the Anzacs often wrote letters back home to Australia and New Zealand telling about the things that they were witnessing, which are some really incredible firsthand documents that we can use today, but also sparked a huge movement in Australia and New Zealand of regular civilians coming together to raise money and to try and support Armenian refugees as best as they could from across the world. There's a Armenian orphanage in Beirut that was actually founded by a couple from Christchurch, which is just absolutely incredible example of international solidarity and recognizing the need and really standing up and answering that call for support. So, you know, Australians and New Zealanders have always been on the right side of this. It's just that now our governments refuse to acknowledge it.
Yeah, and I believe that orphanage was opened by two Cantabrians, John and Lydia Nudson. And I think you might have been alluding to Robert Nicole and Alexander Nimmo, who were two Anzacs who defended fleeing Armenians. I believe Robert Nicole was killed while doing so. So a recent paper put out by Associate Professors Maria Amudian and Catherine Smits of the University of Auckland, they recently published an article describing how New Zealand's lack of recognition is quite closely tied to the significance of the Anzac story to our national identity. Mm-hmm. Having recognition of the genocide might disrupt this kind of idea of gentlemanly warfare between two victims of empire, and this idea of enemies become friends. Further, when the Parliament of New South Wales, that's, mind you, that's not the whole of Australia, just the Parliament of New South Wales, recognised the Armenian Genocide in 2013, Turkey threatened to revoke visas for Anzac commemorations in Gallipoli. Now, given the close proximity between Armenian Genocide Remembrance and Anzac Day, recognition of the genocide might compromise New Zealand visits to Gallipoli or Anzac commemorations. Is this something that we should be concerned about?
I mean, I didn't grow up here, and so I can't speak to I know that Anzac Day is incredibly important to a lot of people here, and they definitely want to honor their family members, their ancestors who died in Gallipoli, and I 100% agree with that and support that. And I absolutely think that we should honor the people who have died in warfare. At the same time, when that honoring and that commemoration relies on ignoring and suppressing history and ignoring and suppressing another subsection of the population, I think it goes from, you know, this well-intentioned desire to support and uplift, and, you know, instead gets turned into something different. And so, yeah, I completely agree with the, you know, honoring of Anzac soldiers, especially, you know, the Anzac soldiers who supported Armenians. And I think that that's the history that we should be really be honoring. That's the history that we can look to as the bravery of the Anzac soldiers. But if that comes at the cost of Armenian lives and at the ignorance and widespread genocide denial, I think we need to be looking into other solutions.
Loaline, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Loaline, campaigner calling for New Zealand to officially recognise the Armenian genocide. If you're interested in signing their petition, you can find it on the Action Station website. You'll also be able to find it in the description for this interview on our BCast page.
That was Get Action with Action Station Aotearoa.
This is Aria featuring Troy Kingi by Mellowdowns.
Perfect, but I'm present. I got burdens, keeps me stressing. I'm still learning how to be the person that I know I'm destined to be. Two peas in the pod, yeah, that's you and me. Let me light your path so you can see the person you will be. Your eyes reflect the universe as I expand the family tree. Your mind's design is quite like mine and I accept it admirably. Your heart is what God handed me. Didn't happen randomly. Destiny, apparently. I lost direction, filled with fear. Then you appeared like magically. Working on myself, still trying to heal the scars I dealt with back when I was just a selfish little brat that felt helpless at. I learned when my thoughts are trying to manifest my light. Then I clicked, it wasn't what I thought until the day that you arrived. I want to see thriving life problems that keep you up at night and minuscule compared to the power that you hold inside. Every flower on this earth still couldn't match your beauty. Even when I'm not around, protection truly is my duty. Don't be scared to chase your dreams and do all the things that will bring you joy. Haven't felt this type of love since when I was a baby boy. My sky, okay. The apple inside of my eye, okay. You gave me a reason to try, okay. You gave me the freedom to fly, okay. My why, yes. But why sometimes it'll go in your favor? That's just life, okay. Remember to love your neighbor. One day you're gonna be someone's wife, okay. You're gonna get hurt, you're gonna get burnt, you're gonna feel strife, okay. You're gonna feel pain and feel like death, but it's not your time, no way. Never let them water you down, okay. 10 toes gonna stand your ground, okay. And if there was love that's lost, don't worry, it comes back around, okay. Be confident, be curious, and stay grateful. Stand firm and don't give up, no matter how long that might take you. Amen. Have respect for yourself. Amen. Be for anyone else. Amen. Just know that I'm always proud to the end. Adia, my love.
Everything I used to praise me didn't really mean a thing without.
what it means for me to walk in my shoes.
That was Doberman by Elliot and Vincent, and before that was Aria featuring Troy Kingi by Mellow Downs.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te ho taka katoa mo tenei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I korero mai ki matou mo tenei rā. That's a wrap for The Wire on Rapa Wednesday. Thank you to all of our guests, the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March, Dr. Ralph Cooney from the University of Auckland, and campaigner Lo Aline. Neira hukiti mihi kia koutou e whakaronga ana. That's thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is The 1 to 4 with Bridge. See you next week.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.